I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
We are two games into the Stanley Cup final. We are guaranteed three more. And here on Biscuits Colon, a hockey podcast, Sean and I can sit here and tell you this is going exactly the way we saw it. Because I will tell you right now, before the series started, I said, Sean, Ryan Reeves and Brooks Orpik are going to score the game-winning goals in the first two games. And Sean was like, "I, you know what? I was going to say the same thing. I'm glad you said it." So
yeah.
If you want to come
I,
to
I
a podcast,
I thought it was going to happen in the opposite order. So you had it right.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's if you box the exactly, you still win money. So I feel like we've come up pretty big here for the listeners with our predictions on the series, which, by the way, was Vegas in four. So you still think it's going to be a sweep, Sean?
No, I don't. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I had some people point out to me on Twitter that mm-hmm. if you predict it's that one team is going to sweep and then that team loses game one,
oh, yeah.
your prediction is going to be wrong. And I didn't really understand that, but luckily people sought me out on social media to explain
right.
how mathematics works. And I appreciate that. It's always nice.
The thing we don't consider, though, when we make predictions like that is how, you know, a fan base like Vegas has been kicked for just years and years and years and years and years. And they don't want to hear, you know, people count them out after all they've been through as fans. So to have two people say Vegas was going to yeah. lose in four, that's where the anger comes from. So I get it.
It is. It is. You know who I'm jealous of is, I don't know if you saw this clip, but Connor McDavid was at, like, I think it was like some tennis tournament or something. It wasn't even hockey, but they were interviewing him. And then at the end, they're like, who's your pick for the Stanley Cup, Vegas or Washington? And he was like, no, I'm not going to make a pick. And I was like, well, you can do that? That is so much better than the way I've been doing it all these years. That's,
Connor
McDavid.
I thought you were going to tell me that, like, he was like, I didn't even realize that was a Stanley Cup final. Is that really the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, it might be. It probably was pretty similar to that. But he was just like, no, I don't care. I'm not going to make a pick. And I was like, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I got to start. So. It's like when I found out Jonah Carey quit Twitter. I was like, wait, you can be like a writer in this business and then just not really ever tweet ever again. Is that an option? Because I feel like that's not an option. I didn't know that was an option. I want to do that. I want that option. Man, one day
we have so much to learn.
One day we're gonna live the dream.
Someday. So let's get into it, because two games in, there are two really good games.
Two fantastic games.
Those are two really good games, and I mean. It's been pointed out to me that occasionally mm-hmm. you and I might complain or criticize
really?
The NHL and its products.
Once in a while.
People seem to feel that we tiptoe up to that line of negativity every now and then.
Okay.
And, you know, the reality is anyone who reads my stuff, I've spent years and years pointing out that very often the NHL product is not very good anymore.
You should do a book about that.
I should consider that. I feel like I could trim it down to 80,000 words, and the reason I keep bringing that up is because, you know, it's like it always reminds me of that old Wayne Gretzky quote that he may or may not have actually said, but that you always hear attributed to him, where he says, every night I played, I knew that somebody was watching me for the first time and somebody was watching me for the last time, and I didn't want to disappoint either one of those people. And every time I see like some dull 2-0 game where it's all block shots and dump-ins and you know, just it's just terrible hockey. I'm always thinking, like, there's somebody out there who's just watched that as their first NHL game. Like, they got their friend dragged them to a game, or they sat down to watch it, or just happened to be on, and they flipped over, and they watched that. They're never coming back. You will never get that person back after you show them what this league presents as its product so often. The flip side of that, you know, this Vegas Golden Knights story has brought, I think, a lot of people and a lot of eyes onto the NHL that maybe wouldn't normally have been there. And there probably were a lot of people who sat down, especially for that game one on Monday night, never having watched a whole hockey game, but going, all right, I'll check it out. Maybe even just the first period. I'll sit down and watch. If that was your first experience watching the NHL, like, how are you not hooked at this point? Like, how are you not like, where was this all my life? How was I not watching this? And game two was, you know, almost as good. Like, that was just great back and forth, speed and skill, lead changes, goals, all of this stuff, big saves, the big, huge save last night, you know, bad officiating and that, and we'll get to that later. But, you know, for the most part, that was fantastic. Like, that, you know, like, I feel like I'm sitting there going, like, that's what we want. And obviously every game can't be game one of the Stanley Cup final, but it was nice to be reminded of what hockey can be and what the NHL can be when it's played at that level and with that kind of approach. Like, it was fantastic, and I really think the NHL probably made a whole bunch of new fans over the last two games, because that was great stuff.
How many fans would you say the NHL lost over the course of, like, between 2012 and, like, 2015 when they tuned in to watch a Kings-Blues game? Like millions, right? There had to be, like, millions of people who saw those Kings-Blues playoff series and were just like, wait, really? This is the best your sport has to offer?
And, like, I get that people, you know, this is one of these things where if you consider yourself a diehard hockey fan, there is nothing this league can do that will make you stop watching. We get that. We've had three lockouts. We've had the dead puck era. We've had all of this stuff. I know there are people who take it as a source of personal pride that they will always be hockey fans, and they think for some reason that insisting on always watching no matter what makes them better fans than other people. Right? But it's, you know, again, how do you grow the sport? You grow the sport by, at some point, you got to get somebody who hasn't watched you before sitting down either in your arena or in front of a TV and saying, I'll give it a try. Let's see what you got. And if half the games you serve up are unwatchable, it doesn't matter that the real fans can appreciate it on a certain level. And it doesn't matter that, you know, okay, yeah, Tuesday night was boring, but Wednesday night was slightly better. Like, you get one shot at people, and you're losing them with so many of the games that this league offers up. But, I mean, if you were going to serve up two great games, this was the perfect time to do it. You know, Stanley Cup final, you're on, you know, you're getting more coverage than you ever got. You've got this great story that I think is presumably bringing in people who aren't hockey fans to sit down and go, okay, what's this all about? What's this, you know, expansion teams in the final? Let's check it out. And if that had been some dull 2-1 snooze fest, then that would have been a huge lost opportunity. But instead, you know, I saw people saying this was one of the best games, most entertaining games they had watched in years, and I have a hard time arguing with that. I thought it was just, it was almost the textbook case of what you would want to show somebody who was maybe thinking of giving the NHL a chance. You know, and I mean, especially, Lord knows, if you were in the building for those, you're probably hooked now, and you're probably one of the diehards.
Here's where you're wrong. Here's where you're completely foolish with your praising of a 6-4 hockey game is, you know, people like me who are more refined and have a sharper eye to understand the game can really appreciate a 1-0 22-21 shot game, because I can appreciate guys like Ryan Callahan and Pierre-Edward Belmar. And Cedric
Paquette. The beauty of an active stick blocking a passing lane.
I mean, yeah, like, sure, people love cross-ice passes that result in one-timers that go bar down and into the net. But for me, the real hockey fan, the true hockey fan that, you know, just really, really loves the nuances of the sport, I want more 2-1 games. I love to fall asleep in front of my TV at 8:45 at night because there hasn't been a shot in 11 minutes. because that first shot at the end of that 11 minutes, you appreciate it more. If I just see a bunch of shots and a bunch of goals, are we really better than the NBA, Sean, if we're just scoring a bunch of points? Don't the points become less important, Sean?
You know what? You're just a more cultured fan, and you know you're not one of these millennials with their need for constant gratification. I actually had somebody tweet at me. They said, if you want to watch goals, you should watch the NBA. And I couldn't figure out if that was the dumbest tweet I'd ever seen or if it was like brilliantly. Like, I was like, what level are we on right now? Because I either really love this or I really hate it. And I didn't really have the heart to ask. But yeah, that's going to be my new slogan. If you want goals, you should watch the NBA.
Dude, if you haven't had anybody reply to you over the last 3 days defending Tom Wilson, you haven't seen the stupidest tweet possible yet. I'm telling you, there's dumber tweets out there. There's a really
Tom, I would love to at some point in my life have any people around me who are as loyal to me as Tom Wilson fans are to Tom Wilson.
It's crazy. Like, it's so unbelievable. It's like those parents of like people that are like in prison just being like, yeah, you know what? He killed 49 people, but he's still my boy. Like, you know, maybe you want to distance yourself from him a little bit there, mom, dad. I'm just saying.
So what were your thoughts on the hit in game one?
Well, let me give you the thoughts of the people in my mentions when I was put it out there that hit was.
Why don't you summarize what what's the word on the street?
Here's what the people are saying, Sean. Here's you know, because as the nuanced, cultured hockey fan, I like to listen to other hockey fans to sort of, you know, maybe cultivate my own takes. And the overall sentiment after somebody who I won't name put out there that Tom Wilson should be suspended, should have gotten 5 minutes in a game misconduct, that he was looking to hurt Jonathan Marchessault, that it was a predatory hit. The overall response was, LOL, interference much? Like, what do you mean? What does that mean? You want a guy to be suspended for interference? LOL. Well, yeah, he hit him super late and tried to hurt him. So yeah, that's what interference is. Like, come on, bro, it was shoulder to shoulder. If he has the puck, that's a good check. Yeah, but there's one key element missing, my good man, and that's that he did not have the puck for a very long time.
That was the worst. Oh. And I say it's the worst, but it's quite possible the Department of Player Safety had the same take, which was,
I know, right?
If you ignore the fact that he hit a guy who was completely ineligible to be hit, it was pretty clean.
Somebody came to my mentions and they were like, it was interference. I mean, no, he said it was late interference, but it was interference. Like, that's what interference is. That's the you're double defining interference. Like, that's what that is, hitting somebody super late. And he got suspended for it in the preseason. And the hit in the preseason was way less predatory. Like, it was him still trying to hit a guy, but like he circled around him and hit him from the front. It was some guy in the Blues who I forget his name. And he got two preseason games for it. Now, I don't know what the conversion rate is. It's like trying to figure out the Canadian dollar into the U.S. dollar for me. I don't know what two preseason games equals in the postseason after you've been suspended again between that time. But I thought that was a game. That had to be a game at least, right? But the rationale, and by the way, the rationale for not suspending him that was reported was some of my favorite stuff. And I don't know what I like more, but I love the fact that they said there wasn't head contact, which I don't know. Like, let's say it's 1952, right? And someone's smoking a cigarette and they're just like, this is good for me. Like, they don't know any better. It's 1952. But in 2018, you're just kind of like, yeah, you're putting poison in your body, so you should know better. And in 2018, when it comes to head injury stuff, like, I'm sure in 20 years, we'll learn even more stuff about it. But in 2018, we know that you don't have to get hit in the head to suffer a concussion. Like, if there's enough whiplash, like, say, for instance, from a hit that's so late you're not bracing yourself for it, you can get a concussion. That's still a super dangerous hit. So that part where they were just like, it wasn't a head hit, okay, that's weird rationale, but fine. And the other part, too, was, and this is the part that I love the most, was it came in the flow of the game. It wasn't retaliatory. It wasn't as though Marchessault hit Kuznetsov and then Wilson went over and decked him, which to me is even weirder, because if that was the case, at least there was motivation. Like, the fact that he just did it for fun, the fact that he did it with no motivation, like a sociopath, like, somehow that's better in the NHL's eyes. Like, there's no reason for him to do it, so that's why it's okay. Like,
yeah. Oh, man. I mean, two things. First of all, I give the league and Department of Player Safety some degree of credit that they do finally seem to be focusing on hits to the head to some extent, but it now feels like we've gone to the overcorrection where anything that doesn't hit a guy in the head, is okay.
It's like an out.
And the other thing is, I mean, you said, you know, what's his motivation? We know what his motivation is. There's basically two reasons that you throw a hit in the NHL. One is to to make a play on the puck, to separate a guy from a puck, to prevent him from making a play. He's coming into your zone or coming into somewhere you don't want him to be, so you physically prevent him from going there, and you do it legally with body contact. And the other reason that you throw a hit sometimes is to hurt somebody. And, you know, I know everyone always says, I don't want anyone to get hurt. I'm not that kind of player. But that is the reason that you hit sometimes.
To hurt someone, not to injure someone. To hurt, like, I think there's a difference. Like, if you're trying to wear somebody down
physically,
that's fine.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you're not injuring in the sense of, you know, I'm going to put this. But you're hitting the guy knowing this, I might end his shift. I might end his game. I might put him out for a few games. And, you know, as much as we might not want to say it out loud, sometimes, you know, hitting to hurt is fine. Scott Stevens hit to hurt. Wendell Clark hit to hurt. You know, these guys, they weren't hitting just to make a play. They were hitting because they wanted the player they hit and everyone else who saw the hit to know, you've got to be aware because I have the ability to hurt you with one of my body checks. And I'm, you know, okay. Like, I'm old school. I'm okay with that. But you got to do it cleanly if you're going to do it. And when it's this sort of play where the puck is gone, there is no play to be made. There is no, you know, Marceau isn't representing any danger. He's not trying to make a play. There is no reason for this hit other than try to hurt somebody. And if you're going to try to hurt someone, you're allowed to do that legally in this league, but it better be legal. And if it's clearly not, if it's clearly late, you know, telling me, well, yeah, it's late, but everything else about it was clean. Well, it wasn't clean. And, you know, it didn't result in an injury, apparently, but it could have. And, you know, if you're allowed to hit a guy who doesn't have the puck and has no reason to expect to be hit, as long as you do it shoulder to shoulder and it's fine, there's going to be a lot of guys getting hit real hard out there. And, you know, I this idea that you hear some people say, well, you know, and I've heard some ex-players say it, where they're like, you know, well, what happened to being aware? What happened to protecting yourself and being aware of who you're on the ice with and being aware that Tom Wilson's on the ice with you? So you got to have your head on a swivel and you got to be ready for, you know, to protect yourself. And I get that, but finish the thought, finish the sentence. Okay, why does he have to be aware of who's on the ice? Why does he have to be aware even when he's not eligible to be hit? Why does he have to be aware of who's on the ice? Because he's on the ice with somebody who might hit him anyways to try to hurt him. And when you put it that way, you know, suddenly it doesn't seem like it's really the fault of the guy who got hit, even though, yeah, 30 years ago he would have been expected to see him coming and cross-check him in the mouth. That's not the league we have anymore. And it's not the league we should want to have. We should have the league where if you're not eligible to be hit, some guy can't come across and smoke you and then claim it was a clean hit just because he didn't happen to hit you in the head.
You know who the most genius marketing person is? Like, you'll probably think like, oh, it was in the 80s. The person who was like, where's the beef? Like, oh man, that's a great slogan. Or ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. That's genius. Like, you associate that with McDonald's. I think the greatest catchphrase of all time, though, is admiring your pass.
Oh, yeah.
Because here's the thing. People love beef. People love McDonald's. I'm not saying they don't. You know what no person has ever done in the history of hockey is admired their pass. Nobody makes a pass and goes, that is gorgeous. Wow. I'm going to watch that.
Look at that 4-foot pass, yeah. I just made.
Oh, man.
That happens.
Right on the tape. That's what's this to my right side now all of a sudden? And they get hit. That's not what happens. Like, when you make a pass.
But it makes it sound like, it makes it sound like a little morality play. Like, he was checking out his hair in the mirror. Yeah. He's like, and then, you know, got hit by a car because he was enamored with his own reflection.
He's crossing the street looking at his cell phone. Ah, well, what are you going to do? You know, he was admiring his phone. Like, come on.
He was admiring, like, if Jonathan Marceau is like, watching YouTube clips of his pass on his phone as he walks down the street and like steps into an open manhole, then
okay, yes, yeah, fine,
I will criticize him for admiring his pass. But you know, what I would say he was doing was watching the puck.
That's what you do.
And seeing where it was going and how the play was going to develop. And yeah, I mean,
because if I'm correct, his pass didn't even really connect that. It kind of just went deep into the zone, right? Like it wasn't as though he sprung a guy for a break, or maybe he did. It was, who cares? It doesn't matter.
But it was a pretty standard pass. But yeah, I mean, this is, and you know, you say admiring his pass. I'd say the other brilliant bit of marketing was, I'm just finishing my check.
Oh yeah, you got to finish your check, Sean.
Got to finish my, I'm sorry, I thought about checking him. I got to finish it.
You know, you start.
You can't stop things that you finish. I mean, I get there are times where a guy's got the puck, you line him up to hit him, you start the process of throwing the hit, and the puck is gone a fraction of a second before you get there, and then yes, you finish your check. It's understood. You may have to finish your check. It's probably better that you do. If you try to bail on it at that point, you know, that can create an even worse situation. But this, I mean, he had to finish the check that he also started after the puck was gone. And I mean, this isn't tough. The NFL figured this out with late hits on the quarterback, that, you know, you can continue a hit if you've already started it, but you've got to minimize the impact. And if you haven't started the hit and the ball's gone, that's it. And if you have to do a little pirouette to get out of the way and avoid the contact, that's what you have to do. You know, the NHL is faster, granted, but I don't see why, you know, the puck was gone. There was a lot of distance. Tom Wilson had barely started to throw the hit, if he even had. This idea that once you've decided to hit somebody, you have the right to just do that because you're finishing your check and that's the sort of player you are, I would like it if that went away.
I also love the other defense too. I saw was, nobody would be talking about this hit if it was anybody but Tom Wilson. Which in a way is true, because I don't think anybody in this series would throw that hit except for Tom Wilson, who has been doing it the entire postseason and basically getting away with two out of every three of these. So why not gamble and try and take out Marchessault? Like I get it. Yeah. I get it from
guys who get suspended repeatedly
are generally the guys that do
for
it.
Similar sorts of hits. Yeah, I mean, they will get more attention when they do it again.
Right, but like Evgeny Kuznetsov's not throwing that hit. Like Matt Niskanen, or as they announced him in the before game one, Matt Niskanen is not throwing that hit. Like it's Tom Wilson, the guy who constantly throws the dirty hits. Like this isn't like rocket science. Like no one's like, oh, that was a clean hit, but it was Tom Wilson, so let's get mad about it. No, it was a filthy hit that Tom Wilson threw because he's Tom Wilson. Like it's not a...
Plus the idea that a hit that knocks the other team's leading scorer out of the game in the standard, nobody would even notice is that if it wasn't he should have been suspended. I think one game would have done it, and I think a lot of the people defending him sound ridiculous, even though I mean if you're a Capitals fan, I get that you're gonna be ridiculous about that. I've done the same.
Do you have to be that ridiculous?
You don't have to.
I mean, can't you just you be like, well, to, what am I gonna but, do
but I do get why it happens, but I mean, at some point,
and the other thing too is
I would like to see the approach to those hits.
Hitting is still awesome, like when you do it the right way. Like last night, Alex Tuck just leveled Brooks Orpik during that power play, where Orpik was going to like hold the puck and try and backhand it out, and Tuck just tucked his arm into his body and just said, you know what, I'm just going to, and he hit him. I think it might have been like happenstance, but he just hit him right in the shoulder, dropped him to the ice. Like no one's saying we shouldn't have that. Like do that, do that all the time, but like. This weird Tom Wilson fetish that Tom Wilson
hit,
fans
hit
have.
Somebody who's eligible to be hit, who knows he might be coming.
Simple as that.
I mean, there's nothing tough about hitting somebody who's not ready because they have no reason to think that a hit is coming because they're not eligible to be hit. I mean, you do it. Might as well do it in the hallway or the parking lot after the game too. Well, I'm just finishing my, I thought about hitting him in the first period, so I had to track him down on the on the way to the team bus.
There's the check. You know what else is great too? You know what else I love about hockey is when a guy just cross checks a guy right in the back in front of the net and then takes the puck and scores a tying goal in the third period and nobody calls
And we should discuss this because every Capitals fan is screaming right now about what about Ryan Reeves? What about the cross check? Also bad.
It's amazing how that didn't really get talked about the next day because of the Tom. Everyone was focused on Tom Wilson because Tom Wilson's Tom Wilson, and nobody like that goal. If that goal doesn't happen, the Caps. I mean, the way that game was going, it's not as though Vegas couldn't have tied it in the next 15 minutes. But
that was a big goal.
It was a huge goal.
And not only a huge goal, and I feel like it did, you know, at least up here, it did get talked about a fair amount. But not only is that a big goal, but that should have been a penalty, which means Washington goes on the power play. Right. Maybe they score and take a two-goal lead.
Like, I saw a story from Paul Stewart, the ex-referee, where he was like, here is the thing the referees missed yesterday. And I was like, oh, finally, someone's going to talk about it. And he wrote about, like, Braden Holtby's pads. Like, what are we doing? Like, I don't understand. Like, how... And the other thing too is, like, you can't even ask a coach about this stuff anymore, because every time you ask a coach about a penalty or a hit, oh, the league's gonna go look at that one for sure. Like, the league's gonna, well, what about your guy who did the illegal thing? I just thought that was a good hit. Like, we gotta stop asking coaches about stuff, because it's just a waste of everyone's time. It's just a waste, man. Yeah. Like, the idea that John Carlson dove. Ryan Reeves might be after Dustin Byfuglien, since we learned this in the last round, because he kept bouncing off Dustin Byfuglien. Ryan Reeves is probably the second strongest guy in the league. And if you get hit from behind, again, like, I'm not saying everybody has to play hockey to understand hockey as a whole, but sometimes there are little tiny things, like if you're on skates, you can be on wheels, you can be on rollerblades, and if a guy hits you in the back when you're not ready for it, you are going to go down, whether he's 6'3", 230, or whether he's 5'10", 190. You don't have the center of gravity that you need to have to brace yourself when you don't know it's coming. That's how you fall down. That's not a dive. No one's diving in that situation. Like, there's no time to think about diving. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's it. Nobody's died. Nobody's like, well, I'm in front of my own net and they're about to get a scoring chance.
Yeah.
So now would be a good time to hit the ice. And like, I get and appreciate that the front of the net is different from the neutral zone. Like, the front of the net is a bit of a war zone, and you're going to allow a lot more going on there. And I mean, how many times have we seen a defenseman cross check a guy in the back 8 times? And, you know, to try to clear him out.
But that guy doesn't go down because he's facing the puck and knows whether, and he's ready for it. That's why he doesn't go down in that situation. That's the difference.
And it was the sort of unfortunate thing where, you know, it led directly to a goal, and yet there was just enough time that it's not like they could call the original based on the fact that it created the goal or the scoring chance. But no, it was a missed call. We've seen a bunch of them.
Was it missed?
In the playoffs.
Was it missed or ignored intentionally because it's the playoffs and the referees don't want to call? That's the thing I go back to. It drives me nuts, man. Like, other sports have bad officials for sure. Balls and strikes, you know, pass interference, called, not called. But I never feel like when I watch baseball that an umpire is calling a ball a strike because he wants to keep the game close. He's just an idiot who makes a bad call. In hockey, like, I get the sense that referees are just kind of like the Eric Halla Backstrom thing last night, where Backstrom like bends his neck back over his head and Halla goes down. And they're like, well, Halla was doing something illegal there too. What, not having a spine that goes both ways? Like, that is that what he did wrong there? So I just...
It's
hard to trust.
Managing the game that I think is frustrating a lot of people. And I've said it before, if you want referees to stop managing the game and stop refereeing to the score, that's fine. Be ready that you're not necessarily going to like what you see every time when some team gets, you know, 4 power plays in a row in the third period of a 2-2 game.
Too bad.
Yeah. Like, and because there are missed calls or bad calls that I understand. Like the one last night where the hit on, was it James Neal?
Oh, yeah.
He got hit, but it was really like, it was more his. Yeah. Like, I get that. In real time, from a certain angle, that is going to look like what it was called as opposed to.
But it also, that was the first penalty of the game, too. So it kind of felt, because before that, there was the Lucas Bezic got hit in the face. They didn't call it. There was something before that, too, that went the other way that wasn't called. I forget what it was. But there were two pretty blatant calls. Oh, the Braden McNabb hit on Kuznetsov that ended up hurting him wasn't called. Not because the hit was bad that hurt him, but it was the follow through into his face that should have been a penalty. They didn't call that. They didn't call the Spezza high stick. So I think referees get to the point where they're just like, well, it's time to call a penalty. And that's how you wind up calling that. Even though I get it, it doesn't look like that. But I think if they had called a penalty before that, maybe they don't call that one because they don't feel as though it's time to call a penalty. I'm so sick of the officials.
It does always
Greg.
Feel Greg. Like as a hockey Sean. Fan, you've always got a sense of what's coming next. When's the next penalty?
Yeah.
Who's going to get it? That kind of
thing. No penalty shot last night. Ryan Carpenter's free and clear for a breakaway and he gets a scoring chance taken away, and that's not a...
And I know people were pointing out that, you know, well, did he lose the puck? Was it the stick lift and then he lost the puck, but then there was a hook? Maybe.
Man.
You know what? Maybe. And I wish that I watched that play and saw the replay and went, oh yeah, that was the subtle difference that the referee picked up on,
yeah.
as opposed to what I did think, which is the hand goes up. I think that's going to be a penalty shot. Then he plows into Braden Holtby, and I go, you know what? I bet you plowing into the goalie just cost him his penalty shot. Now it's going to be 2 minutes instead, even though there's nothing in the rule book that would indicate that one should have anything to do with the other. I feel like you just earned yourself a downgrade based on the fact that you hit the other team's goalie.
What I like, though, about that specific play, like sometimes you watch a baseball game and like a pitch hits the outside corner and it's called the ball, but you can see the umpire kind of like flinch a little bit. Like you wanted to call it a strike, but then caught him. You can almost see that in the penalty shot or the non-penalty shot call last night. He puts his arm up and then he just kind of gestures, but then he skates over to the pile where the scrum was going on. And it's like,
I still have a theory, and I have no way to prove this, but I feel like when a play like that happens from the moment the referee's arm goes up, the longer it is until the whistle, the chances of a penalty shot just starts dropping. Uh-huh. And, you know, if the play continues, if the team picks up, forget it. Like, it has to be right in that moment. Like, play, whistle, point. Because it's just, like, almost immediately you can tell the referees, like, I don't know, penalty shot, do I want to do this?
You think long, you think wrong. But you know what, though, in a way, that's that non-penalty shot call, I kind of think benefited the Capitals or benefited Vegas, because if Ryan Carpenter takes a breakaway against Braden Holtby, I'm pretty sure Braden Holtby stops him like 4 out of 5 times. Yep. But your power play, you know, he put Marchessault and guys out there. They didn't score, but you know.
Yep.
But,
and you know what they did? The one thing I will give credit to the referees last night, because, you know, if in terms of refereeing to the score, this wasn't something they'd normally do, but they did give the 5-on-3.
Yeah.
For it was in third period for a minute where it was on, like, the second one was a penalty.
That was no choice.
But yet, and yeah, you're right. I mean, you look at it and go, well, that has to be a call. But would it have surprised you if they had figured out a way to call it or to even it up, right? You know, but they didn't, and that was deserved. And Vegas earned a 5-on-3 and didn't end up scoring, didn't end up influencing the outcome of the game, but. That to me is an example of doing it right, where you make the call that you need to make, and if it puts a team down too, then that's life.
Yep. We gotta take a little break. Sorry for calling you Greg earlier, but when I get angry and yell, usually it's because Greg's on the other end of the conversation, and it's just like a tick. It comes out like, "Shut up, Greg." But sorry, that was mean. But yeah, let's take a break. When we come back, we can even talk about the 5-on-3 and the weird moment where they kind of set up behind the net like they were defensemen moving the puck back and forth behind the net and didn't really do anything for 15 seconds. It was a really weird 5-on-3, but we'll come back and we'll yell about some stuff some more. We may even talk about the game as opposed to officiating and player safety, because the games were pretty awesome, and game 3 will be Saturday, and it should be pretty interesting because of Yanni Kuznetsov. I can almost guarantee he won't be there. So stick around and you will get more from your angry uncles in 2 seconds.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So yeah, we're tied at 1. I feel like the series could be 2-0 either way, depending on how some stuff went down in those two games. But that 5-on-3, man, like, just, I don't want to hammer this down, but I feel like the one good chance they had was when Marchessault kind of walked the puck back up to the point and kind of, you know, just stalked a little bit, and then he tried to move the puck down low to the left post, and it didn't work. But besides that, it was just, like, weird. Like, Arpin Basu from NHL.com, or from The Athletic now. Sorry, you're free from the NHL. Sorry, Arpin. But he tweeted a good thing that I thought was smart, was that when teams have a 5-on-3 for like 35, 40 seconds, they kind of just get going. Like, let's move the puck. Let's one time it. Let's get it across the crease. But when it's like a minute 30, they're just kind of like, man, we got all day to do this. Let's just hang out a little bit, move the puck around, no urgency, and then you end up not scoring. And that was, I thought that was kind of a good point about that power play.
No, I thought so too, because it's, you know, especially on the 5-on-3, like it feels like you should be able to maneuver it around to the point where you've got a tap in or an A-plus scoring chance, and you know you don't want to rush it. And I normally hate it when power plays feel rushed and the fans are yelling shoot, and it's like, yeah, let them set up, let them work on something. But you're right, when you've got a minute to work with, minute plus, and you're just kind of taking your time, and maybe there needed to be some more urgency there. But you're right, this like the first two games were great. They didn't tell us anything about which one of these teams is better. And we're down to five games to go. And I feel like you got to feel good if you're Washington, because you got five games, you've got three of them at home, you've got one of the best road records in the playoffs in years. So you have to feel like you could take at least one more in Vegas if you needed to. They're set up. They're in good shape. Other than the fact that Kuznetsov really that like we haven't heard anything about the injury, and we probably won't.
Day-to-day, Sean. Game-time decision, Sean. We'll see tomorrow, Sean.
I've had the misfortune of seeing somebody break their wrist right in front of me and seeing how they reacted to that. That looked a lot like that play.
Yeah.
That kind of like going off, sort of half holding your arm, thinking like not in pain, but kind of like something is messed up here.
And the fact that he couldn't
hopefully
even
come
I'm back.
Wrong. Hopefully he's okay, but that didn't look good.
Yeah, like if you're, I mean, they won the first three games they played without Backstrom. They won the last game of the Penguin series and the first two games of the Tampa series. So they showed, like, to me, if they're going to win without Kuznetsov, they kind of have to go back to playing that, you know, hang back, stifle, choke the other team to death in the neutral zone, and then counterpunch thing and let Braden Holtby stop 22 of 23 or 19 of 20, whatever it was. Because like with Kuznetsov, you can counterpunch with anybody. You can throw that Kuznetsov line out there against the Carlson line and live, but now you're going to be down to Backstrom and not a whole heck of a lot behind him. And Backstrom, he's looked fine, but he's probably still not 100% either. But I feel like Vegas, maybe if I'm going to pick a team that was better the first two games, I'd probably say it was Vegas. But I mean, the way they kind of controlled things in the third period, that probably had more to do with the fact they were down 3-2 and they were pressing, and the Caps had 11 forwards instead of 12, so that'll be different in Washington. But like, I really think it's coming down to Holtby, man. Like, I think Holtby has to continue to make saves that, and we'll get to that save. I'm going to talk about that save. I don't know how you felt about that save, but I think that save maybe wasn't that spectacular. But he's outplayed Fleury. Right. He's outplayed Fleury. Fleury's, I think, at 870 through two games. Like, you knew that was coming, and now you just need Holtby to be better than Fleury for five games, and I think he can do that.
Yeah, and I was even like halfway through last night, I was like, I'm not getting that vibe from Braden Holtby. And then the second half, yeah, he turned it on. So let's talk about the save. So
let's do it.
You weren't impressed.
Like, okay, I'm pretty sure we've talked about this before, but I feel like there's a lot of times when a goalie makes a crazy save, it's more about what the guy with the puck did wrong than what the goalie did. And that isn't this entirely. It's not as though Alex Tuck fired the puck back across the crease when he had the whole net open and shot it into the goalie, and everybody was like, wow, oh my God, what a save. But Braden Holtby does nothing wrong in the play. It's a freak play. It happens super quick. It's a 2-on-1 out of nowhere in front of his crease, and he plays the shooter, and the shooter moves the puck over to Tuck, who's on his one-time side, and he has 97% of the net to shoot at, and Holtby has one move there just to stick his paddle out and hope he hits it, and that's what Tuck did. So that save to me is just more about Alex Tuck just not scoring as opposed to Braden Holtby doing anything. So I just, again, like to get the stick out there and everything, that matters more. It's not as though he just got lucky and the puck was shot back into his face and out of play. But I mean, it's not, I just, that's more of Tuck screwing up.
Like, I'm generally with you. I believe that, you know, about three quarters of what we freak out over as great saves are actually just luck, a guy being out of position, and especially on glove saves, a guy kind of dives across and the shooter happens to shoot it right into his glove, and you know, we all go nuts, but in reality it just he just picked the right spot. This one, I mean, as a goaltender, all you can do in that situation is get the stick out and try to take away as much of the bottom of the net as you can. But, you know, it's not as easy as just getting the stick out. I mean, you have to get the stick out and be firm enough on it that, you know, you can just wave a stick and somebody who shoots hard from there is still going to get it past you, even if they make contact. And he was able to pull that off. I mean, you're right. Obviously, if Tuck shoots high,
not even high, just 9 inches off the ice.
But that's not necessarily what you do as a shooter in that situation. If you feel like you think you're going to have an open net, you go high, then that's when the puck can roll on you, and you know things can happen. You know, just go along the ice and slam it home, and you know, Holtby was quick to get over, and like I say, got over strong enough. You know, it wasn't just a pure desperation scramble. Got over strongly enough that if he did, if he did shoot low, he was going to actually, you know, end the play. So I thought, I thought this was better than many of the saves that we are phenomenal. Even though, yeah, I mean, certainly there's a certain element of luck in it, but there always is. There's always somewhere a shooter can go or could have gone, that would have ended in a different result. And, you know, as a goalie, you just take away the highest percentage you can. And I think in that case, he played it just about perfectly and then also had a little bit of luck to get the result that he did.
Yeah, there's no rebound, too. Like, I'm tired of hearing about rebound control, man. Like how many times does a puck hit a goalie and he actually can control it based on the speed it's coming and how soon he sees it and all that sort of stuff? Like, oh, man, what a great job by Braden Holtby to control the rebound. Like, he just wants that puck to hit something, man. Like, he's not trying to freeze the puck. He's not a superhero, man. He's not Batman. He just put his stick out there.
Oh, see, now the goalies are gonna be you thought the Tom Wilson brigade was crazy? Wait until the goaltenders
No, everything you said is true. Like, yeah, he has to be firm on his stick. He can't just, you know, dangle the stick out there and hold it by the knob and hope something good happens. Like, he did everything he was supposed to do, but like the only way he makes that save is if Alex Tuck screws up. Like, there's no other way to do it. But
was it on the 5-on-3? I think it might have been where they won the faceoff like back to Holtby. And he just shot it down, like he just one-timed it down the ice.
I think it was the very start of that power play.
Yeah, and I'm watching that like, oh.
He's a really good stick handler. I remember the first time, like watching him at MSG like a few years ago, like way back when he was still kind of like fighting with like Varlamov and all those guys for the job. I remember just like, because like, you know how like in warm-ups, like the goalie will take a bunch of shots and then they do like a little skate, they skate a loop to get the pucks out of the net. Like, I was watching Braden Holtby and he had a puck on his stick and he was dangling like he was Philip Forsberg, like through his legs, bringing it back. Like, he was like, it wasn't like just like an average hockey player stick handling. He was like a really good stick hand. Like, I understand he can handle the stick. And he also had a really cute play, too, where he kind of late in the game got the puck on his stick, faked it to the corner and then played it the other way. Like, he knows what he's doing. I'm not saying he doesn't. But again, you need to have the guy shoot the puck into you at that point to make the save. It's all I'm saying. Like, so I'm just, you know.
Enjoy hearing from the goaltenders. While they're at it, tell them to make the nets an inch bigger and listen to their theories about muscle memory and all of this other stuff.
Well, apparently Braden Holtby's pads are illegal, according to Paul Stewart. So maybe he made that save with an illegal stick.
Yeah, you know, that little strap and the wrong stick tape color. So I don't know. I mean, if enjoy your Stanley Cup, Washington, that you cheated to win.
The wrong stick tape.
I mean, most of us wouldn't want to win that way, but sure.
Can you imagine, like, that's your thing. Imagine, like, after the game, like, that's over and, like, you're talking to your editor about what you want to write. It's like, what do you want to do? You want to focus on Ryan Reeves, the goal there? You want to focus on the Tom Wilson hit? You want to talk about the fourth line? Or, like, what do you want to do? You know what? I really think that people want to hear about the tape on Braden Holtby's stick. What? Yeah, I think that was the reason why the Caps won. Is he had the wrong tape on his stick? No one saw that but me.
Well, let's just say that given the site he wrote that for, the bar isn't all that high for him. That was probably like the 18th dumbest thing that was on that site that day.
So what do you think? You think the Caps are screwed if they don't have Kuznetsov the rest of the series?
No, I don't think so. Like, I've seen people say that where they're like, you know, is this it? Like, and it's like, no, because there's 5 games left and one player, even a star player, isn't that big of a swing where you go from we were going to win the series to now we have no chance. There's, I mean, it's an impact, sure. And in a close series, it could end up being the deciding factor. But this idea, it was just like, it was kind of when the, reminded me of like when the Leafs in the first round, when Kadri got suspended, and people are like, well, that's it. And it's like, is it? Like missing your second line center for three games? Like it feels like during the season, every time, like, you know, somebody will get injured and they'll be like, you know, oh no, Sidney Crosby's going to be out for 3 months. And you're like, oh, that's terrible. And some analytics guy is like, actually, this will only cost them like 1.2 wins based on. And you're like, really? Is it that little? Okay. But then a guy like gets suspended or hurt in the playoffs and he's going to miss a few games. And they're like, that's it. Series over. There is no way that this team can, you know, it's big for sure. He's probably one of the small handful of players that you'd say would have the biggest impact if he missed time. But can they still win 3 out of 5 games when they've got the majority of those at home? Yeah, of course they can.
In the words of Pierre Maguire, agreed. Agreed, Sean. Okay. I don't know. I'm a little less confident now because I did think that the Caps were kind of were gonna basically roll in the series, but now, like you said, like the you have Braden Holtby. You have Braden Holtby. I think they won 3 out of 4 without Backstrom, so they can win 3 out of 5 without Kuznetsov. I'd be worried.
They've had one goal from Ovechkin so far.
Just the one.
He hasn't had that game yet where. Yeah. Okay, can't win the big one. All of the many big ones that he's won.
He's averaging 0.50 goals per game in the Stanley Cup final, the same average he had coming into the final. That was the best, too.
He's not elevating. No. Not elevating his game.
Somebody tweeted that, like, I think halfway through the first period of game one, they were like whoever it was, like, so-and-so's got this, so-and-so's got that. You know, Ovechkin's only got one shot on net. And it's like, oh, man, can this guy just breathe for, like, a minute? Just let him play hockey for, like, maybe a game, and then we'll come back to this.
I got to say, Alexander Ovechkin on the bench has been fantastic.
Yeah, I know. What's going on?
Whoever
there?
Made the decision to like just have a camera on him the whole time, between the reactions and him getting hit in the face with the puck and not reacting at all, like just being like, eh, this is great. Let's get the Alexander Ovechkin just watching. Like, is he like this all the time, or is he just melting down because it's the cup final and he's reacting the same way everyone else watching it is reacting?
I think he's like the guy from the first Deadpool movie, the bad guy, Francis, whatever his name ended up being for real or whatever. He just, all of his nerve endings are fried. Like, he can't feel anything anymore. He's completely numb to everything that can happen out there. So that the puck gets him in the face. He's just kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, well.
It's fine. But speaking of being hit in the face, unless you have other Stanley Cup final thoughts, we can focus on the other great NHL topic, which is brain injuries. Yes, brain injuries.
Yes. So Gary Bettman, at his annual State of the Union, in which he doesn't answer any of the questions.
He should stop doing that. Somebody tweeted that over the weekend too, over the weekend, or Monday, I guess. Why does he do this? Why does he take attention away from what's supposed to be the best time of year for your league by just constantly talking about all the bad stuff right when the final starts? Like, that's a weird time to do it. But yeah, it is.
But he declined to comment any further on concussions or CTI or any of that stuff, bigger CTE, because he said he didn't want to start a new
cycle.
News cycle, which didn't work out that well because I don't know. How is this playing in the U.S. or is it playing? Because up here in Canada, these revelations are coming out where somehow TSN got their hands on the videotape depositions that various NHL higher ups had given, and has been kind of reporting on them all week. And there's nothing in there that I think is game changing. You know, there's no revelations that are scandalous, but a lot of it really doesn't look good for the league and on the people who are making the comments. I feel like it's definitely a story, but I don't feel like it's breaking through and really resonating, probably because it's happening at the same time as the Stanley Cup final. Are you guys getting a sense for it? Like, is it a story down there?
I mean, like, it's the problem is that it's hockey, so nobody generally cares about hockey to begin with down here. And then the fact that it's a concussion thing in hockey that involves, like, transcripts and depositions and, you know, video.
But that's the thing. It's because transcripts are boring, yeah. But actually seeing somebody, you know, like in some of these cases, giving, you know, smart ass answers to lawyers or being clearly frustrated and annoyed by the questioning.
Bob Lee did a thing on it on Outside the Lines, but I feel like it might have been like at the very end of the episode. Like it's like on SportsCenter down here during the regular season. Like it's like, well, it's 59 minutes of Tony Romo and LeBron James and all this stuff that, like, you know, they would do all the time. And then it was like, also the Blue Jackets won 11-9 against the Wild in the craziest game we've ever seen. That's it for us. Good night, everybody. And that was kind of like the end of Outside the Lines, like yesterday or the day before. They touched on it. They showed the video of Jeremy Jacobs being like, CTE? What is CTE? Is that a college in British Columbia? I don't even know what CTE is.
Claimed he didn't even know what
Never
it was.
Never heard of it before. But
and this was 2 years ago. This wasn't 20 years ago. This is 2 years ago after the NFL had already...
Brains? What are brains? Is that the thing the zombies eat in the movies that I've seen? I've never heard of those. How can you hurt one of those if they're not real? Next question.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know how they win the lawsuit. I just... Because, like, you're right. Like, there's no real smoking gun, but it's just everything taken as a whole. Like, the... Like, Rick Westhead has done a bunch of stuff on it for TSN, and he had the revelation that the doctor... I don't know. I forget if we can curse and say dirty words in this podcast, even though it's Vice. Like, I feel like we can, but I don't know. But, like, there was that sign in which the doctor mocked up a joke sign that said concussions are for a word that is used to describe, like, lady parts in a negative way.
Right.
And, like I understand, like, that probably isn't enough for the NHL to go, all right, here, let's settle this. Like, but I mean, like, that and everything else. I also wonder, too, going back to the Tom Wilson thing, I wonder if the NHL were to get tougher on stuff like that before the lawsuit settled. I wonder if that reflects badly on the lawsuit case for the NHL because they're now doing tougher things when they weren't doing
it
back then.
That's the theory, right?
I don't know.
When the NHL goes in front of a judge and says, we can't, you know, we've done as much as we can. And then the judge says, really? Because he just did a whole lot more
last year.
I don't know if that matters legally.
I just wonder that. I don't know if that's a thing.
Yeah. And I've been like, generally, I've been a little bit maybe more forgiving of some of the stuff that comes out of the league because this is a lawsuit situation. And people need to understand, like, this the NFL lawsuit was like a $1 billion suit. This is the sort we're talking about, potentially, depending on how it goes, we're talking about the sort of amount of money that would fundamentally change or even threaten the NHL's existence. And I don't think that's necessarily overselling it to say that if this really went bad for the league, this could be a major threat to at least you know, some of the teams and you know, the league itself. So I get that, you know what, a lot of this plays badly, a lot of this sounds terrible. They're not in the PR business right now. They're in the legal lawsuit business, and they're going to do whatever they feel like they need to do to defend themselves, and I feel like they have a right to do that. But it doesn't play well. And yeah, I do wonder. I'm certainly no lawyer, but I do wonder at some point how much of this, you know, potentially leads to either directing a judgment a certain direction, or much more likely a settlement of some sort. Where you realize that there's been so much self-inflicted damage here by the league that they need to find a way to move on from this.
I'm not a lawyer either, but I've watched a lot of Law and Orders, like SVU, Criminal Intent, the original. I mean, I may have seen a couple of the LA episodes, so I feel like I'm well-trained enough to understand what's going on.
I think so, yeah.
I think exigent circumstances and voir dire, obviously we got to focus on that. Discovery is actually a huge thing too, but you know, I don't want to throw a bunch of legal terms at people to make it seem like I know what I'm talking about when I don't. So we can just move on from there. By the way, before we get to the questions and stuff, I know I feel like you probably have thoughts about the Vegas Golden Knights pregame show. Imagine Dragons aside, but the stuff they do.
I do, and you know what, I think I might write a thing in this Friday's column on that. Here's my very brief view.
Okay, I'm gonna time this. Go ahead.
I've written about this. I'm all in on Vegas being goofy with the ceremonies. Get ridiculous. Do it. I'm in with the night fighting airplanes, all of that. Just can we maybe just figure out a reasonable time for the game to start and then work backwards? And if you want to do a 3-hour ceremony and make it an all day party, that's fine. But like last night when they were doing like the drums and the lasers and everything, and then it's 8:15 and like the lights dim and you're like, here we go. And then they're like, we're going to have a rock concert now. And you're like, really?
It's unbelievable.
And I just like that because I mentioned that on Twitter and people are like, oh, here come the fun police. And it's like, what happened to this league where saying, gosh, I hope the game starts soon, I'd really like to see some NHL hockey. And people are like, oh, the fun police are here. Look who hates fun. It's the guy who wants to watch the game that he's tuned in to watch. No, yeah, I don't know. Go nuts, Vegas. Start the Game 5 ceremony now, for all I care. Have David Copperfield fly around the rink. I do it. I'm all in. Just, you know, maybe there. And I understand that everyone who was in the building, all the media, everyone there loved it. Totally get it. Some of us are sitting at home just waiting for the damn game to start. So maybe we can work this. Just pick a time and just work backwards. Just some simple subtraction. I feel like we can work this out.
And my quick response is, of course, yeah, the game should start very close to when you say it's going to, at the top of the hour or whatever it is. And I'm pretty sure Game 6 and Game 7 of the Warriors and the Rockets were scheduled to be 9 o'clock games in both places. And I'm almost positive both games tipped off at 9:04. Like, I can't even imagine how great that must feel as an NBA fan to put on the game at 9:02. You get a couple of guys talking about, oh, they got to do this to James Harden, blah, blah, and the game just start. When you put on a hockey game at 8:02, like Doc Emmerich down here talks for like 9 minutes about, you know, whatever. And then they cut to the booth and it's like Doc and Eddie, and you can look behind them and see the ice and it's dark. And you're just like, oh, man, they haven't even done the night thing yet. Like, oh my God. And you know, like in your head, you're just doing the clock and everything. But when you put on an NBA game at 9:02 and they're doing the, you know, the talk from the courtside thing, like they talk for a couple seconds about strategy and what's at stake and all that. And then they here are the lineups, and they show the lineups over like the big wide shot of the court. And you can see all the guys standing around center court ready to tip the ball. And you're like, oh, that's fantastic. Oh, it's 9:04 and they're going to do it.
Dave.
It's just,
Dave, why do you hate fun? Why do you hate fun and want to watch hockey? What is wrong?
Hey, I'm not against a Rocket show before a Rockets game. If you want to do a Rocket show with Rockets and, you know, whatever, right, fine. But like the 9:04 tip is just, it's beautiful.
Yep. Yeah. What now?
Well, you're
reader questions.
Well, you're in charge of the questions because I deleted right. Twitter from my phone over the holiday weekend, and when I put it back on, I realized I didn't have the login saved for the Biscuits Twitter account, so I can't get into it today until I get home. So
okay, well, let me.
You're the question master.
Let me scroll down to the questions. A lot of questions about ceremonies. A lot of questions about refereeing.
Well, it's, you know, it's too bad we didn't touch on any of that.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of billion-dollar suits, I want to get back to a time when the only billion-dollar suit in the NHL is one that Mark Bergevin's wearing. Ba-dum-bum.
Very nice. This one, I'll do this one because I've had actually a couple people ask this. Andrew Jemison says, don't talk like that, Andrew. Don't do that on Twitter. Y'all had a discussion pre-playoffs about Marc-Andre Fleury's Hall of Fame future outlook. Has y'all's view changed?
Well, y'all's
have our all's views changed?
No,
because I think before we said probable Hall of Famer, but we were kind of like, if we were in charge,
not my Hall of Fame, but if he wins the Stanley Cup with Vegas and wins the Conn Smythe, which he most definitely will if Vegas wins, then I think he's definitely going to get in. I still wouldn't put him in. Like I forget the stat, but the stat is something like, like he's never finished in the top 7 in Vezina voting, some number like that in his career. Like he's never been one of the 7 or 8 best goalies in the league in a given year while he's played. So to me, I take that back. That doesn't mean he's not one of the. It just means he's never even been a Vezina finalist. He's never been for sure one of the 3 best goalies in the league at any point in his career. So no.
But I do think that this, even if he doesn't win, I feel like this playoff run has pushed him to.
Yeah.
Close to sure thing Hall of Fame. I just find it's weird, like, because this happened again, not like recently with Marian Hossa, where he, you know, formally announced that he wasn't coming back. I just find like 364 days out of the year, hockey fans complain about the Hall of Fame. They're like, it's the Hall of Very Good. Every borderline guy gets in. But then every time somebody retires, it's instantly flips over to like, you are an idiot if you don't think that Marian Hossa, who never came anywhere close to any award voting or anything like that, if you think he's not a Hall of Famer, you are a moron and I will punch you in the... And that's like just the local media tweeting that. And you're like, okay, geez, calm down. All right. Nobody's even saying that, but all right. Is this like, I'm sure 20 years ago, if there was Twitter, that somebody would have been like, if you don't think Bernie Federko is a Hall of Famer, then I will hit you in the ankle with a crowbar. One other question. This is John Morrell asks, only because we didn't really get to this topic, Melnick versus Alfredson.
Oh, yeah.
Is anyone right in this case, or is this a terrible PR disaster for the Senators?
Well, it's both. It's Alfredson's right.
It's a terrible PR disaster, but I mean, Alfredson's right in the sense that he's not a Senators employee, and he... I guess if people didn't hear the story, there was some sort of event he was at and he was asked by a reporter, and there's some question as to whether he knew he was talking to a reporter or not, something about the Senators, and he said, he made a reference to, we'd like to get a new owner or we're trying to get a new owner, and then afterwards said, by the way, that was off the record, which of course is not how it works, and the reporter reported the comments, and it was a fairly big story here in Ottawa because it's been assumed, if not outright known around here for a long time, that Daniel Alfredson and Eugene Melnick don't get along and that Alfredson would like to see Melnick gone, and whether that's something he would just simply like or whether he's a little more active behind the scenes in helping that happen is not known. But this was sort of the first kind of on-the-record confirmation. And if you're Eugene Melnick, there's no winning this because Alfredson's the most popular player in the history of the franchise. And there anything, you know, in fact, I don't think Melnick and the Senators responded in any way that I saw, which is probably the right call because anything that extends that story is not going to go well for you.
Yeah, I saw people debating about the whole on the record, off the record thing. Like both parties have to agree before you talk. And I can get the argument where maybe you don't know it's a reporter when you're first talking. But without being there, it's hard to really get into the ins and outs of that. But like, if you're talking to a guy and he comes up to you and says, hey, what are your thoughts on Eugene Melnick? And he's holding a tape recorder. You can probably figure it out from context clues.
Plus, if you know, I don't know about you. I talk to lots of people every day where I don't talk to anybody all day long. But in theory, I could talk to lots of people every day who almost all of whom I would assume are not reporters. I don't then follow my comments up by telling them our discussion is off the record.
Like you're getting your coffee in the morning.
Usually
somebody's like, hey, you're Sean from Your Dawn Goes Brown. Yeah. What do you think of the Leafs? You're like, well, I think the Leafs are a disaster and I hope Brendan Shanahan fires Kyle Dubas. Also, we're off the record here. Don't tell anybody I said that. Like, that's not how it works. You can't do that.
Too late. All right.
So is that it? Is it time to do the thing? Is it time to plug, to announce?
Yeah, we should plug. I should plug because last week I did the tease. That's an insider term, of some sort of news. It's not really news because I announced it yesterday on Twitter and Facebook and all of that stuff. But I do understand that, you know, our analytics tells us that we've got thousands of listeners who listen faithfully to this podcast, but don't consume any other online media.
Good for them.
Of any kind.
Smart.
It's just, it's the podcast and then that's it. And they go on and live happy lives. So I will, make the announcement for them, which is that I have written a book that is coming out in October. I have written a book which covers the entire history of the NHL, start until today.
Wow.
100 plus years of NHL. And it's a history book, but it has a focus on kind of the strange and weird and funny and basically all the bizarre stuff that has happened on and off the ice in this. So it's I think I put it in one of the two, it's the original six and it's Rocket Richard and it's the Gretzky trade and all of that stuff. But it's also like the time that the players wore earmuffs so they wouldn't hear the crowd and the time that players had to referee their own game and the time that Mr. Rogers was named captain of the Pittsburgh Penguins and all that kind of weird stuff. And the way I pitched it when I originally sat down to write it was that it's basically the 100-year story of the world's most beautiful sport as presented by the world's dumbest league. And that's they softened that a little bit to put it on the cover, but that's basically the pitch. And it's coming out in October. And it's available now for pre-order, so you can go on Amazon Canada and the US or any of the other booksellers, Indigo, wherever you normally like to buy books. It's going to be a hardcover. It's going to be in bookstores. It's going to be on your e-readers and all of that. And you can go and pre-order it right now, and you'll get it in October when it comes out.
So what you're telling me is that since you're calling the league dumb on the cover of the book, you're probably not going to get a lot of NHL support. Like, no one from NHL.com is going to come and interview you about the book to help you sell it, is what you're saying. That's the perfect book. That's the book I want to read. That's the book I need.
The NHL has already been...
oh, yeah?
Let's not... There have been certain things where we've reached out to the NHL and said, like, hey, can we use this photo or can we do this or that? And they've been like, no, because you called us dumb, which is their right. And I can kind of
see that. You have to disclose that. Can't you just be like, hey, I'm writing a book about the NHL. Can I get a photo of Rocket Richard? And they just
yeah. be like, what? But they're like, what, who's writing the book? And they're like, this guy. And they're like, yeah, he's going to call.
What's the book called?
I actually,
NHL's 100 coolest, most awesome, dope, fresh things. Yeah.
I totally get and appreciate why the league is doing that, but I will take it and try to spin it into like a some like this is the book the NHL doesn't want you to read.
This is the book Gary Bettman
banned by Gary Bettman personally.
Put your eyes on it's the book.
When in reality, they're just like, no, we're not going to give you free stuff, so you can make fun of us.
Well, all right, there you go. Buy the book, pre-order it. Pre-order. That's the thing. You got to go do it. You got to go support Sean mostly, but I feel like you support Sean, you support the biscuits, you support the group, the team here. And right. So yeah, we'll be back. I'm guessing we're back next Thursday now. I think that's going to be our thing, because I guess if we come back on Tuesday, that's only like two games, or maybe we'll, I don't know. We'll figure
what
it out.
What is it? It's Saturday and Monday. And then I think they're off until Thursday. So I don't know. We'll see.
It is Tuesday next week. I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
We're flying by the seat of our pants here, or the seat of my cargo shorts.
We're sort of
whatever.
Making it up. Did you want to do your Sedin thing before we finish, or
are
we out of time?
You know what? It's as we sit here, it's 11:05 as we sit here right now, and we got to kind of wrap it up. We've probably been going for like an hour plus. So
I don't want you to rush it. I want to make sure.
I wrote this whole thing out where I kind of explain everything about what they meant to me and to just the world, really. But you're right. I want to go back and reread it and make sure
let's do it next week. We'll lead off the show next week as long as nothing else is
Yeah, we should be good. We'll get to it next week. The season's almost over, so we got to get to it. But we'll get to it next week. So yeah, come back next week for some games 3 through 4, maybe games 3 through 5. I'm not sure. And the Sedin talk. We'll get to it next week. We promise. So we love you and goodbye.
Bye bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.